Good afternoon and welcome to Our Savior's Radio Show. We're back again this week. It's great to have you with us. I am Pastor Eric Jelinek sitting with Pastor Jennifer. Good afternoon.
Hi.
So today we are moving on. Last week we looked at King Saul. We are still in 1 Samuel. We're going to be picking up in 1 Samuel 16. But we're going to be picking up now where a transition is going to be taking place. There will be a change from King Saul to King David. And so that's where we're going to be starting today. Last week we left off and there was a parade of different sons of Jesse who were coming forward because a new anointing was about to happen.
No, that's what we need to talk about right now.
Well, that's what we need to talk about right now.
Yes,
okay, I'm just going to pass it on off to you at this point.
So God has told Samuel, Saul is not the one anymore. We need to anoint another king. And Samuel realizes the kind of king that Saul was and said, how can I do this? How can I get away to anoint a new king without Saul hearing? He'll want to kill me if he finds out that we're anointing another king. But God makes sure that he takes care of that. And so he sends Samuel out to Bethlehem. And basically, he knows that there is a son of this man named Jesse who he needs to anoint, but he doesn't know which one. And so, as Pastor Eric was saying, there starts a parade of these sons because he's got a number of them. And they're all tall and good-looking, and they're shepherds. And, you know, Samuel looks at them and thinks, well, surely this must be the one. And God tells him, nope, not this one, not this one, not this one, until finally he's run out of sons, basically. And Samuel says to Jesse, isn't there somebody else? Well, you know, just the youngest one, but he's out keeping the sheep. And Samuel says, well, go and get him. And it says that when he brought him in, he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. This was the young one, the youngest one in the family. And God immediately tells Samuel to get up and anoint him, for this is the one. This is the man who is going to be king over Israel. And so without any words of, we don't hear of him saying much of anything, but he goes and he anoints David to be the future king of Israel. But it was not taking effect immediately because Saul was still alive and there was no recall or anything on Saul. And so David would be king eventually, but Saul would need to die first.
Now, during this time, when David had been anointed, then, as they put in verse 14, the Spirit of the Lord left Saul. So basically, with this anointing, we see that this transition is going to take place. Well, with the Spirit of the Lord leaving Saul, then an evil spirit would come upon Saul every once in a while. And this was one of those spirits that would just haunt him. It came at night oftentimes. It would frighten him. It was just one of those things that really threw Saul into a tizzy. And so finally, one of his officials came up to him and said, we've got to figure out some way to help take care of this. So how about we find someone who can come and play some soothing music for you, someone who can calm your soul, and you will be able to get some rest that you need, and this evil spirit will be put at bay. And Saul says, you know, that's a great idea. Let's do that. So go find someone. And the guy goes, well, there's this guy named Jesse who lives outside of Bethlehem, and he's got a son who can play. And so why don't we have him come in? And he's also a brave warrior. He can speak well. There's a lot of good things about him. So why don't we have him? And Saul said, all right. So he sent a message to Jesse and said, send David up here. Have him leave the sheep. Have him come up here. He's going to come and basically soothe my soul. So he did that. And David came up and he played the instruments and he calmed Saul down. And Saul was so pleased with this because the evil spirit would then leave him and David would be able to calm him down. So we hear that story about Saul and David, but then things change a little bit because this is one of those areas where when we read through Samuel, there's a chronology problem because we hear the story about David being called up to get rid of the evil spirit for Saul. But now we're going to hear how Saul meets David for the first time. And it's going to be the story of David and Goliath, a story that you may have heard before. So I'll pass this one off to you as you start with the David and Goliath stuff.
So we've talked before about how the main enemy of the Israelites were the Philistines at the time, and they were kind of in constant warfare with them, various battles. And Saul, as king, would be basically the military general, and so he was in charge of the armies, but sometimes he was not very effective, we hear. In this particular battle in 1 Samuel 17, we hear about one warrior named Goliath who challenges the Israeli army and says, "All I'm asking is for one warrior. You send out one warrior, he takes me on. If he wins, we become your servants. If I win, you become our servants." Sounds simple enough. Well, the Israelites are chicken, basically. And they just, instead of sending somebody or refusing, they just don't even answer, and they just kind of hide. And we hear that this happens pretty much every day for over a month, that Goliath comes and challenges, you know, for them to send one warrior out, and they just don't do it. And eventually David hears about it, and David is with his family. His brothers are in the army, but he's young. He takes care of the sheep, and he hears about Goliath challenging his people and the army. And he says, "What are you talking about? None of you are going to take him on. We are God's people. God is with us. Why do you not trust that God will be with us if we confront this man in battle?" And so in the end, he volunteers to go and take on this giant, as we think about him, though we don't know exactly how tall he was, that he just a boy, will be taking on this Philistine giant on behalf of his people. And what weapon does a sheep herder have but a slingshot? And so he went and gathered 5 smooth stones from a riverbed, which likely were not so small, probably more like baseball-sized. And he takes his slingshot, and he goes to meet Goliath.
And so he goes out there, and Goliath, when he sees him, just starts to laugh, just absolutely starts to laugh, basically saying, "Why are you guys sending me this little boy? I mean, it's like sending a little dog after me. You know, this is really just sort of a joke that you would do this kind of thing." But David, he said, "You know, you've come out here to fight. You've got a sword, you've got a spear, you've got a dagger, whatever it is, but I'm coming out here and I'm going to fight you in the name of the Lord. This is the God of Israel's army, and you have insulted not only us, but you've also insulted God. And so today, God will help me to defeat you. I'm going to knock you down. I'm going to cut off your head. I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to leave you for the wild animals, and everybody in the world will know that Israel has this life-giving God." And so they start this battle. And when Goliath starts forward, David comes towards him. He puts a rock into his sling, and then he throws the rock. It nails Goliath in the forehead, cracks his skull, knocks him down, and he is out. Without using the sword, David defeats Goliath. So then David runs over, and he grabs Goliath's sword and proceeds to behead Goliath right there. As this has happened, the Philistines saw what happened to their hero. They take off. Then all the Israelite soldiers let out this battle cry, and they chase him as far as they can, and they basically destroy this Philistine army.
Before this, I forgot to mention, King Saul hears of David and hears that he wants to battle him. He's like, "Sure, then I don't lose any of my own warriors. Sure, here, take my armor." And so Saul actually gave David his own armor for this battle with Goliath, though he didn't need it at all because Goliath never even got in contact with him. But at the end of this chapter, we hear that Saul, you know, stands up and takes some notice and says, "Now, who is this guy? Who are you? This little guy who can take on this great giant?" And he says, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." And after that, we start to learn of one of the most kind of spoken of friendships that we hear about in the whole Bible, David's friendship with Saul's son Jonathan. And we hear about this in several chapters, about how close they were. The wording is that the soul of Jonathan was bound to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. They were very good friends, and it's a very good thing, because Jonathan was an incredibly important ally for David to have, because David would not have survived the rest of Saul's reign without Jonathan's help. Go ahead.
After we start to hear about this friendship, then stories start to get told about David. I mean, David goes out. He had killed Goliath. The battle was over. The Israelite army, they all started to go home. And as they go home, some singing starts to take place. And they start to sing these happy and celebratory songs. And they sing that Saul has killed 1,000 of enemies and David has killed 10,000 enemies. Well, with this, Saul hears that the people are singing the praises of David above him. And Saul is a jealous king. And so he gets really angry that this is happening. And he gets angry because he thinks that David is going to take over his kingship. And at this point, we hear that Saul didn't trust David anymore. Now, there will be times that they get along, but there's also times where we also see that Saul and David really start to grow apart at this point. And so David was asked to come in and play for the harp for Saul once again when an evil spirit had overtaken him. This time when he came in, though, Saul had a spear in his hand, and he thought, you know what, I'll just throw the spear at David and take care of this now. He threw the spear, but David dodged it, got away. All of this started to happen, and it wasn't the last time that it would, because Saul really had issues with David, and we start to see all of this starting to fall apart.
Yeah, they have a very, very caustic relationship. It's kind of a love-hate sort of relationship, that David wants to serve God and serve his king, but how can you serve a king who is continually trying to kill you? And Saul realizes how incredibly powerful and effective David is as a warrior and as a musician and so many other things. And he loves him and he hates him. And, you know, he's constantly trying to trap him or kill him. But also he can't live without him, because he's the one that leads his army into victory so many times. So to this point, David is not married, and it's customary for kings to give one of their daughters to those who are victors. And so he offers to give his elder daughter to David as his wife. And David basically says, I'm not worthy. Who am I? I'm just a poor guy. Why am I supposed to be the son-in-law to the king? But I guess he agrees. And then Saul marries her off to somebody else, kind of just stick it to him. So then Saul tries it again. He says, oh, okay, well, I've found out that my other daughter, and I don't know how to say her name, Michal, she loves David, and so you can marry her instead. And so David finally agrees, even though he's very humble and says, you know, I'm really not worthy to be the son-in-law of a king. But Saul makes it happen, but he tries to kill David, and, you know, he puts a condition on it. He says, you don't have to pay anything to marry my daughter. You know, they often have to give some sort of some treasure of some kind to the family of the bride, kind of as payment for her. But Saul says, here, this is what you need to ask of David. The king doesn't require a present from you except for 100 foreskins of the Philistines that may be avenged on the king's enemies. So basically he's asking David to go and kill 100 Philistine men and circumcise them after death and bring the foreskins to him. And kind of figuring that he would never succeed at that, and even if he did, the others would be so angry that they would kill him and that his daughter wouldn't have to be married to David in the end. Well, of course, that's exactly his plan did not go as he hoped, and David goes and does exactly what the king has asked, and he comes back after killing the 100 men, and Saul realizes that he has to live up to his promise. He's very afraid of David. And it says that Saul was David's enemy from that time on. But he marries the king's daughter, and so now he is a part of the royal family, not just the best friend of the prince, I suppose he would be called, but also now he's the son-in-law of the king.
As we move into chapter 19, once again, Saul is trying to have David killed. And so what he does first is he sends out his son. He sends out Jonathan, as well as some other officers, to have David killed. But Jonathan, like we've said, had such a close relationship with David that that wasn't going to happen. So he went and he warned David. He said, you know what? My dad's trying to have you killed. And so I want you to hear this for yourself. So I want you to go out into this field, and I'm going to bring my dad there, and we're going to talk about this, and you can hear everything that's going on. So the next morning, Jonathan brings Saul out, and Saul, he says, why are you doing this? I mean, David hasn't done anything to you. He's served in your army. He's always done what's best for you. He even risked his life trying to kill Goliath and killing Goliath. He has brought great victories with everything. It's made you happy even. So tell me, why are you trying to have him killed? And so Saul agrees at this point and says, you know what? I swear by the living Lord that I will not have David killed. This is something that will go against him later, trying to hunt him down, but he says that he won't. Well, at that point, David believes him, and so they go back out and they engage in a battle with the Philistines once again. Well, later one night, David is at Saul's home. He's playing the harp, and Saul once again is sitting there holding a spear, and an evil spirit once again comes upon him, and Saul tries to nail David with the spear, but again fails. David runs out and realizes that Saul's going to try to have him killed. So he goes and he sees his wife, who is Saul's daughter, and says basically what's going on, and his wife says, you've got to get out of here. You've got to get out of here tonight. And so she helps David go through a window, climb out, all of that. David takes off, and then his wife goes and puts a fake David in the bed, basically, a statue of some sort with a head, covers him with goat hair, dresses him in David's clothes, all of that. The next morning, Saul has his guards come to arrest David. His wife says, David's sick, not available to do that at this point. And Saul, the guards go back. Saul says, that's not good enough. Go get him. So they go, they get him, and they realize that they have been tricked. At this point, Saul is irate with his daughter, saying, how could you help my enemy get away? And she turns it on to David, basically saying, well, he said he'd kill me if I didn't help. But we start to see, again, all of this that's going on between Saul and David and the animosity, the caustic relationship, as Pastor Jennifer had mentioned, between the two of them.
Chapter 20 is another account of Saul trying to kill David. It's titled The Friendship of David and Jonathan in many Bibles. And you know, David, having been pursued by Saul, goes to Jonathan and says, what did I do? You know, why is your father trying to kill me? And Jonathan tries to reassure him and says, I'm never going to let that happen. My father always tells me what he's going to do before he does it, and I will never let him kill you. But I think he was wise enough to know that he needed David to get out of there for a while, so he sends David to hide for a bit so that maybe Saul's anger would calm a little bit. And it's interesting as we read through this story, the language that's used about Saul and the spirits that it talks about being kindled and an evil spirit. And I haven't heard many, I haven't heard official talk about this, but it seems maybe in modern day terms that Saul may have suffered from some sort of mental illness that, I don't know if we would call it schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or something, that his moods changed so drastically and he was so tormented by things other than what was really happening. It seems that he really suffered from paranoia, where David would have been very faithful to him and wanted to serve him, but he was so afraid of David and what David was going to become that he made David an enemy, which did not end well for him. So anyway, there's several chapters of times when Saul is pursuing David and trying to kill him. But then things kind of flip, that David has the opportunity to kill Saul in the wilderness, and he doesn't do that. David also continues to be a strong military leader, and they continue to gain some ground. He's able to avoid Saul in the wilderness, and then in chapter 4, it talks about how David spares Saul's life. He had the chance to kill him because, you know, that would be self-defense. How many times had Saul tried to kill David? And so David would have the right to kill him, though maybe not in that time legally.
And I think part of that, too, is David viewed Saul still as one who's anointed by God. And so he did not want to be responsible for killing someone who had been anointed by God as the king.
Right. So in chapter 25, we hear that Samuel has finally died. I don't know how many chapters after his farewell speech, but Samuel has now died. Let's see. Chapter 26, we see that David spares Saul's life a second time. Chapter 28 is an interesting chapter. Samuel has died, but Saul had come to depend on Samuel so much that he doesn't know quite what to do. He has become very paranoid and is very nervous about continuing to win battles, and he's very worried about the future of his kingdom. And so instead of, you know, letting his armies train and to improve his armies, he decides that he needs to consult a medium to know what to do. His goal is to be able to talk to Samuel after his death, but that doesn't quite work out as he had hoped it would work either. God is not a big fan of people consulting mediums, and so that's just another nail in Saul's coffin. We find out that his life is not long for this world. Go ahead.
No, you were...
It's an interesting passage where Samuel does talk to Saul, and Saul talks to Samuel, and Samuel is not happy about it. Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? But Saul's in great distress, and Samuel just reminds Saul that God has not chosen him anymore, that he would not be the king for much longer. And so it's like, you can keep fighting and you can consult mediums and whatever, but it doesn't matter. You are not the one who's chosen by God. And that casts Saul into even more of a tizzy, as you put it earlier.
As we move to the end of 1 Samuel, we then will hear the story of the death of Saul and his sons. There are different stories told about this throughout the scriptures here, but the one that we hear about in 1 Samuel 31 is where we are now, is that there was a battle going on with the Philistines. And it was in this battle that the Philistines closed in upon Saul and his sons, and all were killed. Saul was killed and the three sons were killed.
No, Saul kills himself. His sons were killed first. And when he sees that his sons are dead and that they have lost the battle, he's been injured so badly that he throws himself. He asks his armor bearer to kill him first, and his armor bearer won't do it. So he falls upon his own sword, basically committing suicide. And so Saul and his sons all die on the same day.
And so when that has taken place, then the Philistines see what has happened, and they go and they cut off Saul's head and take off his armor, and they go and they use this as their victory, that King Saul has been dead, and they want to spread the message to everyone that this is what has happened. Saul is gone. The king has been killed. And what then happened is some of the people that had seen this take place, they went and they claimed Saul's body. And they took down the body of Saul and his sons and brought him back, where they then took him to Jabesh. And they said they burned him and then buried the bones under a small tree in Jabesh. And for 7 days, they went without eating. They were fasting so that they could show their grief and their sorrow at the loss of their king.
So at this point, that's kind of the end of this chapter, because Saul is dead and David has not yet been crowned king. And things seem very, very difficult for the Israelites. They have lost the battle. They have lost their king. And so surely they must have been very nervous about what would come next. But we will enter into that next week as we begin 2 Samuel.
So thank you again for joining us this week. If you have any questions, please send us an email. We would love to hear from you. Besides that, next week, like she said, we'll start up on 2 Samuel in the first chapter. We hope you can join us again, and have a blessed day.